You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 32. This episode, the Green Lantern Movie Review.
Temporary host, Eric. I guess you guys have heard me on the show before. With me today is, unfortunately, Colton. Fortunately, for once, Andrew. This guy's never around. And as always, Brandon West himself. How are you guys doing tonight?
Great.
Pretty good, man. Pretty good.
Depressed now.
You deserve it. Yeah, I guess we're all here to reviewing this. I guess a movie came out recently that we probably all have some kind of vested interest in for our podcast. The Green Lantern movie.
I've heard
the Green Lantern movie came out starring Ryan Reynolds. At this point of we're recording it, it's about a week old almost, and it has. I guess I could just say it has completely tanked financially and completely tanked critically. And I guess I guess we'll get into that. So we're just gonna go around everybody quick, give your quick reviews, and then we'll get right into it. So
jerk each other off.
Yeah, we're just gonna rub around, just gonna roll over. I've got a lot of lube, so I hope you guys brought your appetites. For what's about to happen
Excellent.
In your life. Anyway, so let's start it off light. Let's go to Colton first, so everybody can get a drink while this is happening. Colton, what'd you think?
My thoughts on the movie. Well, to start off, then I was starting to get a little bit concerned because not what I exactly wanted. It was way better than I thought people gave it credit for. I mean, it started off. You know, we got this whole little summary with the opening, the narration, and. I'm not going to summarize the whole movie, but generally speaking, I like the special effects for the most part, except for certain parts. I really liked Ryan Reynolds as Hal Jordan. I thought it was a fun role. Blake Lively as Carol, not so much, but generally, yeah, I liked the movie. Although I'll get the details of why exactly I had some problems with it shortly. Or do you want me to go into it now?
No, you know, if you want to, that's enough for now. I think just to get a sense of what you thought. How about you, Andrew? What'd you think?
Well, I mean, going into the build towards the movie, I found I was very disappointed in myself. I feel like I was supposed to be very excited about it, but I just couldn't muster up any kind of excitement, maybe because I've been distracted with this or that. But whatever the case, I just wasn't really looking forward to it. I finally had to just make myself go and see it. I found it was a lot better than I was fearing. It was by no means spectacular. There was really no wow moments, and even what good moments there were heavily flawed, and I don't know. I mean... Not as bad as I feared, but not as good as I hoped.
Okay. All right, Brandon, how about you?
I saw it kind of late, I guess, but probably that day or Tuesday. That being said, I thought it was pretty good compared to what Colin said. It was crap, getting crap reviews from everyone. I thought it was amazing compared to what had been out there. As far as excitement, I didn't have any going into it. But when I sat down in that chair full of eight people in that theater, I was excited. I was smiling. So I let my geek flag fly. I had my shirt on. I was excited for this. I thought it was pretty good. I thought Blake Lively did a good job.
Express.
It was definitely
serviceable.
I felt like every scene shown in the trailers between her and Ryan, both like individually and together, were like absolute garbage in the trailers, but they were so much better in the movie. Without going into specifics, I thought it was a good movie. Definitely flawed, but still something, you know, that bridges the gap between terrible and greatness.
Right, right. Okay, cool, cool. Well, yeah, I guess my opinion was pretty similar to everybody's. I was actually happy with it for the most part. It's one of those things where I ended up seeing it by myself because I have no friends or life, and a dog actually pissed on me on the way back. But I saw it by myself, and it's actually kind of hard for me.
Couldn't drag the old lady to it?
She was busy doing life stuff, I guess. But it was actually funny because I, when I'm watching trailers leading up to it, I was like, this actually looks pretty good. It looks kind of exciting, a lot of action, looks like a lot of fun. And then I said to her the night I was going to go, I was like, do you want to go? She's like, you know what? No, it does not look remotely interesting. I'm like, huh, I guess that means it's not going to make any money this weekend. I liked it. I think there's a lot of problems with it. I think I could rip any movie apart. I could annihilate, my grandmother if I had to. But I mean, there was parts of it that I really liked, and I think the parts that didn't work, you can kind of easily point out, And I think, I think it's interesting because this is DC's first movie in the post Marvel age, Because Marvel, I mean, people say like, oh, the Marvel universe with Avengers and stuff, but I think this movie has evidence of every single Marvel movie ever made in it. I mean, it obviously wants to be Spider-Man, it obviously wants to be Iron Man, it obviously wants to be the Avengers and stuff like that, and it's not working because that was the essential problem with the movie. It was just a little too full of things that weren't quite clear. And a lot of it really worked, and a lot of it didn't really work. I was really happy with Ryan Reynolds, because he's nothing like Hal Jordan. And Blake Lively, I don't know. She seemed bipolar. She was completely different in one scene to the next. So I don't know.
That's true.
I thought I would really like Peter Sarsgaard. I love that dude, but he wasn't really any good until he got a mutated fly head and started screeching and stuff. And I'm a big fan of screeching in movies, but yeah. And so overall, I was going to say thumbs up, but about halfway through it, it becomes kind of unwatchable. And by the time the climax happened, it's kind of limp. And I was someone who watched a lot of clips leading up to the movie. You do really see everything in the clips. And if you dilute the action and the excitement of the movie down to just those scenes, it's about 20 minutes of a movie. So that's kind of unforgivable. So that's my general take on it. So I guess let's have at it.
Well, you mentioned Sarsgaard. Mm. I thought he was great, but I also thought there was a lot of – Heath Ledger Joker in that performance.
You thought so?
No.
Yeah,
no. There was a lot.
No.
Especially the first fight scene, which I'm going to be honest, I didn't understand at all.
What's happening? You mean?
Yeah, the ending.
Yeah, what quite happens? Yeah, they're not really sure what happens.
he kicks.
It begins
Peter
very
down.
Suddenly and it ends very strangely.
Yeah.
Like much of the fight.
Yeah. I mean, we've been told over and over by Ryan Reynolds building up to this movie that this is Harrison Ford kicking indoors, beating up bad guys, and getting a girl. That is what I expected. So when Ryan Reynolds burst, or let me just say Hal Jordan burst through the door, or the wall rather, and kicks down Sarsgaard, I thought that was great. But then Peter starts setting people on fire, and then the scene ends. And I don't know why Hal would just leave a murderer on the ground somewhere for him to walk home.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't. The scene just cuts away from what was a great moment. I thought the moment where Hector Hammond slams Hal's head down mentally. Yeah. I thought that was the best moment of the entire movie.
Oh yeah.
But then they just drastically cut away, and I just thought, what is going on here?
Yeah, it seems diminished how much action was in the movie, which is kind of disappointing. I mean, it's an action movie, and I mean, the Hector stuff doesn't. I mean, it's literally an hour and 20 minutes into it before Hector and him first get into a fight, and at that point, he'd only done one Green Lantern-y thing, and I don't know why I don't know how you can quit a job and they let you keep all the equipment. he leaves. Oh, it's like I don't want to be a Green Lantern no more, and then he comes up on Earth, and he's like, yeah, I still have Green Lantern powers, and then he goes to Blake Lively. He's like, it's so great that I'm a Green Lantern because it's like I'm a space cop. Wait, except I quit. Shit. And then yeah,
I think he was supposed to mail back his ring 3 to 4 days.
Yeah, I guess right. Just why don't you just think it over, man? I think that was one of the sorry, Sam.
Not to interrupt, but this is harking back on this editing thing again. That we got this scene from Oa where he goes through the training, and before we get into the specifics of that, he quits.
He quits. Yeah.
And the next thing we know, he's saving lives again, and I guess that's a good thing. But on the other end, it's like, how did you get home?
Yeah, it's a little epileptic, and people, a lot of people are saying there's not enough development and stuff, and I think that it's the opposite. I think there's an endless amount of scenes of Hal kind of like questioning himself and wondering why he's doing what he's doing and being like, oh my God, how can I do this and who am I? And it's like endless and endless and endless. I mean, about an hour and 20 minutes into it, he's just sitting around on his car picking his nose when Hector, you know, his spider sense goes off and he has to go fight Hector and stuff. And I think that's one of the things I want to point out. I think the motivation of the character is completely transformed. I mean, he's Spider-Man. You know, he's not Hal Jordan. He's not Iron Man.
You're calling him reactive?
You know, it's the idea that he's someone who doesn't really like himself and is given this opportunity and then uses the opportunity for good, but then constantly questions his responsibility and constantly questions his rights.
That's kind of different, though, isn't it?
No, but that's what Spider-Man is. I mean, that's essentially the Spider-Man mark. The Spider-Man mark is a guy who gets all these awesome powers, does awesome things with it, but it all comes with like this crushing guilt and this kind of like low self-esteem and stuff. And I mean, Ty Templeton did a webcomic about the movie, which actually hits it on the head, where Hal Jordan in the comics is a guy who's fearless, and in the movie he's afraid of everything. I mean, by the end of it, like, his friends literally have to slap him in the face with the pizza they're eating that night and say, like, you are okay, guy. You know, like, it's fine, don't worry about it, you know. And it's, you know.
Hal's supposed to be the exact opposite. He's supposed to be some kind of cocky, arrogant, I know what I'm doing, I'm sure of myself, let's kick some ass.
Yeah, he starts that way, and then about 20 minutes into it, till about an hour
later, he transforms into Peter Parker.
Peter Parker, yeah.
I feel like he was confident and cocky through the entire movie. It's just that when shit got to an extreme level, like when there's a giant cloud monster bursting through windows, he's like, oh shit, this is not good. I'm not ready for this. Or when he gets his ass kicked by an alien he just met, he's like, okay, this probably isn't the best role for me.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, I think when the scene with the Green Lanterns, everything's very reactive. He's like, oh, this is really cool and stuff. And he's like, wow, what is that? And then when the Kilowog wants to fight him, he's like, I guess. And then when Sinestro wants to fight him, he's like, I guess. I mean, it's not like – there's a sense when Sinestro kind of gets in his face, he's like, oh, okay, I'm going to fight you because I fight everybody and stuff. But he, like you said, he's very reactive. He's not – he doesn't seem to really care about what's happening. And like that was interesting because it is something you don't – that's why I like the character, because I'm watching the movie being like, this is a guy who's completely apathetic and has like no emotional ties to anything. Thing who like is learning to kind of what is his responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. But that's, I mean, it really isn't Hal Jordan from the comics. I mean, the fact that the movie, you know, I want to say just right off the bat, if I ever hear someone say the word fear or afraid again, I'm going to kill myself. Like, there's literally a soliloquy in the end where he says fear three times in one sentence, you know, I mean, and the movie, and supposedly, apparently, the being a Green Lantern is about overcoming fear, and it took Blake Lively, you know, an hour and a half into the movie to tell him that. He's trained by, like, multiple Green Lanterns who keep telling him, like, you're a punk, you're scared, you're a punk, you're scared, you're a punk, you're scared, you're a punk. And all they should have said to him is, all you gotta do is overcome your fear. He's like, oh, wow, you're right. Why didn't you give
– Well, no, at the end of the movie, Sinestro's like, hey, it's not about being fearless. It's about overcoming fear.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, so I guess it's supposed to be a lesson learned for the entire Corps that – hey, the human taught us something.
Sure.
Because apparently they were going on the assumption that, yeah, we're fearless, and then, oh, crap, that thing's scary. Ah!
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I can rip on the flaws and stuff. I do want to talk about some things I liked in it and stuff. I mean, I liked the training scene with Kilowog was cool. I don't understand why in movies when people train at places, it's okay for their teachers just, like, punch them in the mouth and stuff. I mean, like, I think I kind of hit on this. We were talking about it before. Kilowog is obviously supposed to be like a big tough guy and stuff, but I mean, is the only way they can think to train him just to start punching him in the face until he learns to not get punched in the face? You know, I mean,
dodge.
It's cool and stuff, but it's one of those things where what is Kilowog really teaching him by smacking him around? You know, like I can smack you.
Put up your guard.
Yeah, I guess, right? Block. I mean, but yeah,
those are key tactics in battle.
Yeah.
Well, what did you think about the constructs? I think that the training scene was where we saw most of the constructs used.
Yeah,
we got a sun, some swords, and a wall.
Yeah,
and Captain America's shield.
And that's what's interesting too, because I mean, the Geoff Johns comics have been strict about he only makes constructs, and they don't really take on the attributes. It's basically like you're firing a laser, but the laser looks like a jet, you know, and you're hitting someone with a rock, but it looks like a mallet, you know. And whereas the movie took Kilowog creates a sun. I mean, he creates a gravitational force and stuff. So.
Yeah, that was
– I mean, that's
– presumably that would be possible because a sun does produce the energy, so you just have to concentrate enough energy to a small enough size to where it would have the mass of a star.
Well, yeah, exactly. He's creating enough mass to create controlled gravity, and that's pretty intense. That's a pretty intense usage of power. And most of the other time, everybody's just, you know –
I've got a Gatling gun
shooting each other and stuff. And yeah, I mean, but that was pretty cool. I mean, I think the part with Sinestro and Hal going at it was pretty sick. I mean, you got to see a lot of the constructs go in and out, as opposed to just like the demonstration. You know, I like the idea that Yep. Sinestro could just kick through his constructs, you know, because they're flimsy, because he could kind of like see right through them and stuff. I mean, it's pretty good.
He's new.
I don't know why they start sword fighting, just except for the argument that everybody has to sword fight in every movie ever made, you know, that's an action movie.
But, well, I mean, thought the race car scene was kind of incomprehensible.
why he did the race car? Why not just like make a balloon and drop it to the ground?
Yeah. Well, because
I couldn't tell what I was looking at.
Because he saw his nephew's Hot Wheels track. He's like, you know what? That worked.
2 hours
later. Like, why would
is that fight? Why that was there?
Like, why yes. did he just... Why didn't he just grab the damn chopper and like set it down?
I don't
like
think
a big,
that scene.
Like a big hand or something.
Yeah, 2 hours later.
It's kind of weird.
That waste of 7 minutes on a nephew does not justify that Hot Wheel Satan construct thing.
You got to give this movie credit because it's the first superhero movie in a while where it's the first movie and yet the guy turns into the superhero within 20 minutes. I mean, he's Green Lantern within 20 minutes of the movie. And then he just doesn't do anything for an hour. I mean, it's kind of like
That was disappointing.
I think 20 minutes might be pushing it because the first 20 minutes was Tomar Ray talking to us.
Well, I mean, I just meant as in like he's Hal Jordan's Green Lantern pretty quickly, you know. And I think people kind of say like, oh, is it Geoff Johns' fault? And what did Geoff Johns exactly do to this movie and stuff? And I think, not to be like picking on him, I guess, but that's a very Geoff Johns-y thing, you know, completely remove any element of actual superheroism, you know, and make it all about this kind of like paint by the numbers, emotional journey and stuff. And that's why the movie kind of falls apart in the middle, because Hal's conflict is so dragged out and never resolved. Like, no one's even trying to resolve it, and he seems to ignore the fact that it isn't resolved. He's like, I really hate myself, I can't be Green Lantern. And then the next scene he's saving somebody's life, and then the scene after that he's like, I really hate myself, I can't be Green Lantern. And then the next scene he's saving somebody's life. I mean, so it's kind of like completely arbitrary, you know. And then at the end of the movie when he gives that big awful, awful, awful speech, and then, you know, goes off and fights Parallax and is like, I learned a lesson about – what did you learn a lesson about? Apparently you're just really – you're tricky and you're badass, I guess. And
well, what speech are you referring to?
When he confronts the Guardians about – when Sinestro is going to put the ring on, then he shows up and says, Guardians, you guys are afraid of being afraid, and you're fearful of fiery fears. And like, how dare you say fear to us? And, you know, that Geoff
– I thought that was
– fear me.
Yeah, that was pretty corny. And like, where's
– not be cornier. Yeah.
Yes. You know, Mitchie, on the point you touched upon earlier, I think the difference, though, is if Johns had actually written the movie, I don't think we would have seen him without the ring on once he got it. He'd have just been staying in a suit and asleep and flying around and punching people.
I think if Geoff Johns had his way, Hal Jordan would never
do. Batman would have shown up. Yeah, Batman would have shown up and punched out by Green Lantern.
And Hal Jordan would never do anything remotely Green Lantern-y. I think he's not interested in that at all. I think the movie kind of hits on that. I think, like I said, when I was saying it has like the Marvelitis, you know, it's obviously Amanda Waller was in there, but in no recognizable way was she Amanda Waller, except for the fact that her family was killed by guns. That's about it.
Can we mention that was the most useless part?
Oh, completely.
Yeah,
movie
that no point
entire
character whatsoever.
And honestly, I had a discussion with some of them, and she's kind of the character presented in the film is the exact opposite of Amanda Waller. I mean, first off, she's a scientist, which Amanda Waller, whether or not she has any scientific training or is a doctor, it's not who she is in the comics. And she, there's a part where Hector says like, "I want to tell the world about this," and then she gives him a dirty look. He's like, "No, of course I won't." And she says, "I'm sympathetic. I want to reveal all these secrets, but I can't because I work for somebody else." That is literally the opposite of Amanda Waller. Amanda Waller's character. Right. Protects even the most trivial information. You know, you ask what she had for lunch, she'll kill you and your sister to make sure nobody ever finds out. I mean, that's
this is the woman who puts bombs into multiple people for the most
inane
tiniest
reason.
Of yeah, crimes.
Yeah. You know, I think even though they did the character wrong, I think the idea of the character was, hey, we're establishing that this is a shared universe. This character could show up in
exactly.
any movie,
they're
right?
They're making another black military figure to put in their movies, just like Marvel does for Nick Fury. And the fact that they denied it, it's like, just stop, DC, you're fucking – DC's a fucking liar. Just the company itself is a goddamn liar. And I think nothing's more exemplary than that. I mean, the only thing, like I said, remotely Amanda Waller-y about her is that her family was killed in a similar way to the comic books Amanda Waller. And even that
– which is something we shouldn't have found out.
When it's revealed in that scene, it's interesting, but it doesn't lead to anything. It doesn't mean anything for the
character. Wait, what – wasn't it only revealed in the comic? Because I didn't really remember seeing anything detailed except for one small flashback of
the grave. That's what we're talking about. No, it was a whole flashback where you saw her and her family, and then you saw guns, and you saw people crying over dead bodies, and you saw her at a grave, and the implication being her family was killed by guns, which would be interesting if it added anything to the character at all. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like you can have a throwaway line in a movie where it's like, oh, remember what that doctor did to you when you were six or something, and it's like you're like, oh, that's horrible, but it adds depth to the character that you're seeing. But that was just – it was just a scene to show you, look, she's Amanda Waller from the comics, because the fact that she's named Amanda Waller isn't enough, I guess. And then the fact that, honestly, not for nothing, but just watch Amanda Waller getting orders by Tim Robbins, you know, a senator, just like some lowly ass senator being like, you know, get me a newspaper, Amanda Waller. Like, it's like, fuck that. I mean, it's, you know, and you can't even be like, oh, it's the early stages of Amanda Waller. Like, that's fucking stupid. Then why use her? I mean, why use her at all? You know, it didn't add anything to the movie. It was just, again, Marvelitis. Like, let's put a bunch of stuff in there so we can put it in our next movie and say they're all part of the same universe, you know?
And she'll probably be written different in any of the other movies anyways.
Well, yeah, if these other movies happen, which they probably won't, you know, I mean – there's no reason not to.
What you're saying, we'll never get another DC movie again?
No, I just don't necessarily think that they're going to bother to try to do anything shared with this. I mean
– no, not now.
I mean, it's
now.
Possible they'll use the same characters and same ideas to kind of quantify
this Justice League movie.
Possibly in the same movie, but, you know, there's no reason to assume that Angela Bassett's going to show up as Amanda Waller in all the next DC movies. I mean, you know, she's not in the Superman movie. She's not in the Batman movie. And those are what's going to make money. And that's probably what's going to signify what's next in the line of DC movies and stuff. And I mean, basically what this is I feel like the best we can hope for is this was DC's training steps. You know, like they're like, well, how can we do a movie that's not like the movies we've done? Well, let's just do a Marvel movie. And it didn't really work. And, you know, I don't really get what the critical ire was. I mean, I understand people not thinking it's amazing, but like the outright like one star, zero star.
Oh, it was brutal. I mean, this movie was a tad.
Yeah, and I'm never one to people, you know, to be a fanboy. Like, oh, they just don't get it. It's like maybe they're seeing something I'm not. Maybe I'm just kind of too enmeshed in the material to really objectify myself, make myself objective about the whole thing. I just don't really get it, you know. And then it's funny because you could see that kind of trickle down effect happen to fandom. I mean, fans, all of a sudden, fans are saying it was garbage, and no one thinks it was garbage. Just fans are saying that because it didn't make any money, because critics didn't like it, you know. It's like, and people are saying like, oh well, would you want it to be the next Dark Knight? It's like, why are fans using Dark Knight as a litmus? Like, nothing is. Nobody's saying it's like Dark Knight. If anything,
you mentioned that
a Green Lantern movie shouldn't be exactly
even
like
if it
the
isn't,
Dark Knight.
If they are comparing it, they're not comparing in terms of tone, they're comparing in terms of quality. Like, and then if anything, it's like there was two superhero movies that came out like in the 2 months leading up to it, Thor and X-Men, who have, you know, X-Men more or less isn't really the same thing, and you kind of can, or that's reliant, but Thor is the best example to compare it to, because they're very similar movies, you know. I mean, they're both about lower tier characters on the companies that, you know, have to that have a good
giant space
thing. And they have a good sell point, and they have a separate world, a separate thing, and they come back to Earth, and, you know, it's all about like learning a lesson, and that's how you become a superhero and stuff. They're very comparable, you know. And critics love Thor. I mean, you know, everybody loved Thor. Thor made a lot of money, you know. And Green Lantern, just people didn't love it, and they didn't, you know. So I mean, what do we think was the difference? I mean, what do we think people really didn't respond to about it?
Have you seen both movies?
Yeah, I have.
Well, would you say they're very similar
in terms of movies? Thor is a lot funnier, but Green Lantern has better action. But they have both
funnier.
Thor, yeah, Thor's.
I can't really think of a funny scene in
Thor. Oh my god!
Not intentionally.
Thor was funny. Thor was a comedy. There's like nonstop jokes in that movie. Especially as soon as it gets to Earth, it's like,
there was
comedy. Like, my girlfriend was like, I can't believe this movie is so like deliberately funny. And I was like, it's really weird how this movie has no interest to anything would be.
Kat Dennings was like the fun. I don't want to get off topic.
Yeah,
but really?
I just
funny?
Think it was nonstop funny. Whereas, you know, Green Lantern was a good. I mean, my thing is when I see these movies, there needs to be a certain amount of humor that I can kind of laugh at. And there was a couple of good jokes in this. I mean, you know,
you didn't laugh at Green?
No, I did a couple times. I really did. But
I thought Carol was hilarious. I thought their entire scene at the bar. Her fake laugh is awful, by the way. But I thought their scene at the bar was funny. I thought him answering the door was hilarious.
Yeah. It's funny. I think it was
funny. He had his moments.
And I think the whole line in the trailer where he's like dying a ring from a purple alien, and that's lame. But then once
completely
when he says in a swamp, I laughed. Like, I was like, aha, that's funny. For some reason, saying in a swamp made the whole thing funnier. I was like, why didn't you put that in the movie? But yeah, overall, the all the oath jokes were just as bad as they were out of context as they were in context. And what's with the ring charging? I mean, I don't mean to be like a fanboy and stuff, but what's kind of the point of having a charging ring if you could just literally tap it and the thing gets charged, you know? Do you all remember that scene where he's trying to
– What, you wanted him to sit there for
at least take a second. I mean, you know, that's kind of like the whole thing. I mean, not to be like
– I thought that was a great scene. And if we had spent any more time watching his – hand glow, it's just been a waste of time.
No, I agree. That's probably why they cut through it. But I mean, you could have, I don't know, you could have made it more dynamic. That's kind of half the point of the character. I mean, if you know, you, well, we're not going to, but if we did get a movie later and there was an actual storyline where he ran out of power from the ring, you know, which again, the movie makes no parameters as to how he runs out of power, if he runs out of power, etc. But
Because he didn't do anything up to that point.
Yeah, apparently he just flew around all night and took pictures of himself, and then he had no power the next day for his best friend Tom. Who also, you know, that scene where he shows everything to Tom is cool, except for the last line. Doesn't the hero get the girl? Like, are you out of your mind? Like, why would you deliberately ruin a scene with some shit like that? You know, like,
yep.
That was awful.
There's so many parts.
Yeah. And then it cuts
awkward and weird. Yeah.
There's so many parts with this movie where it's like you deliberately ruin a scene just by being shitty and stuff. And what – okay, now Harry at the end, right, where he gives Hector – first off, the whole thing with him and Hector, okay, like you don't know that they – you don't even see Hector till about, you know, a quarter of the way through the movie. And then you don't know they know each other till more than halfway through the movie. And I actually went to the bathroom during that scene and came back, and I missed the one line of dialogue where Hal's like, hey, we've known each other since we were kids, Hector. He's like, hi. And then that's it. Like, no other point is there any context for the relationship. I mean, you sort of get the sense that Hector might like Carol because he's got some newspaper clippings and stuff, but never to the point where it gets fanatical, justified fanatically by the end of it, you know? I mean, so that's
– You got a serial killer newspaper cutouts, yeah.
But that, and it wasn't even that. It was just it was just like, hey, she was in the paper that
day. Exactly.
You know?
It's almost like his obsession – I mean, I think we're supposed to get that his obsession escalates. But for some reason, he gets older articles as his obsession escalates. Like, it's like he happens to have a newspaper that says she was there. And then by the – almost at the end of the movie where he's being mutated, it's like he's got a clipping when she was like 10. Like, you know, Carol wins the Girl Scout Award. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, your obsession traveled back in time? Like –
But you could say he went to the library and looked up exact dates of when he remembered things happening to Carol.
Can't say that. No one in their right mind would say that. They would just be like, "That's stupid." That's all anybody would say. I think, and here's my problem with it too, is that the whole arc of the characters actually works with the scene where Hal tries to like talk him down, be like, "Don't give in to fear," or whatever he's saying. I mean, it's complete nonsense, but whatever he's saying, it works because especially because the movie keeps trying to do some parallel editing. Every time something happens to Hal, they show what happens to Hector, and every time, you know, Hal is using the ring for the first time, Hector is mutating, et cetera, et cetera. And it kind of takes away from it for me because I'm like, I want to see the ring getting used. I want to see him charging the ring. I don't really care to see Hector mutating.
I thought it didn't work is because it was cut so drastically. Yeah.
That's definitely something I wanted to mention. One of my biggest problems with movies, it just felt like it was cut to shreds. Like every single transitional scene from one to the other was stripped from the movie to cut down its time.
You know, I mean, I think I don't know. I mean, a lot of people said that it seems like it's really edited to pieces. I think the problem is that they probably – and here's what I think it is balance-wise, they probably didn't have a lot of action. They probably didn't have a lot of special effects-heavy sequences that worked. I don't think if you get deleted scenes, you're going to get like 3 or 4 minutes of action. I think all the action you see in the movie is in the movie. So I think they know that if you have a movie like this and you add extra weight to it that isn't like – action-oriented or funny, you're just going to kind of draw attention to the fact that the movie's boring. So they probably did cut down a certain amount of like expositional scenes and stuff, but I think there's an extraneous amount of exposition in this movie. I mean, we get the opening monologue where it explains what the Guardians are, and then Tomorrow essentially just reframes that and restates that information about, you know, an hour later in the movie. And I'm like, why didn't you just wait? Why didn't you just let the audience be surprised, have surprise and be in suspense until you had a legitimate character explain what the ring is, as opposed to a voiceover in the beginning of the movie, which is completely inconsequential, you know?
Well, the point then becomes, what does all this really matter if to make it seem more action filled, you cut out any sense of flow and timing?
That's definitely one of the problems in the movie. There's a lot of flow and timing issues. Like, you know, the most awkward part of the movie for me, honestly, is when he rests. Parallax shows up, kills Hector. Carol saves him, and then he escapes with Carol, and then Parallax starts eating people, and then Hal flies about a mile away and has like a 3 or 4 minute conversation with Carol about how he has to go save them that are being eaten. I'm like, they're being eaten while you're having this stupid conversation, you know? I mean, like, why are you having this conversation?
Well, he has to reassure her that he's gonna be
and
okay.
Just be like, I'll be fine, and then fly away. I mean, like, you know, be a fucking badass and stuff, you know, whatever.
Want to get fancy? If he wanted to get fancy, he could have just constructed like some kind of bird creature to deliver a construct letter
something.
To her. Since they can do stuff like that.
Get to Carol really quick for a second. Like I said, I think Blake Lively's performance is kind of epileptic, and I get the sense that she's supposed to be a woman who has a fiery disposition, but is tempered with steel, et cetera, because she's a businesswoman now and stuff. But I feel like she went from robot to hysterical in like 2 seconds, you know, especially when she's in the office being hysterical. Green Lantern shows up, she becomes doe-eyed, then she realizes how she gets exasperative, and then she becomes completely lovey-dovey with him, and then apparently at the end of that scene she cries because Hal is irresponsible. I don't quite get why she goes
no.
I do believe she's tripolar.
Yeah, like I said, I think she
She goes around the wall.
But she starts crying, and I'm like, is she actually just – I mean, it's interesting. It'd be in an independent film, I guess it would be interesting if you're watching a movie and all of a sudden one of the characters just cries because the other character's story arc isn't over yet. But it seems weird that she's like hiding like, oh my god, I'm crying because Hal just doesn't have any responsibility. It's like, get the fuck over.
You are Y'all are so mean. Nah,
just get over yourself.
Now, she was amazing.
Amazing, no. She was...
Okay,
wow,
I wouldn't go that far at all.
Okay. Amazing.
She was good.
I'm the optimist, and I can't say that.
It's funny, too, because I don't think she didn't seem as young. Because a lot of people's complaints is she obviously is 15 years younger than Ryan Reynolds, and it shows. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think you get the same age because she kind of looked ridiculously plain, you know, with whatever the makeup they gave her to make her look a little older and the brown hair. She looked very beyond what I looked at her. I was like, is she a starlet? Like, I know Wes is obsessed with her, but I think it's just because obviously you are Blake Lively in secret. But I mean, like, you know, some people must be sexually attracted to this woman. I mean, not that she has to be. I'm just saying she looked a little blah.
If she's not 15 years younger than Ryan Reynolds, then her acting talent is.
Well, yeah, Gwyneth Paltrow looks like a duck. A lot of duck-looking people that are famous nowadays. I saw a movie and I was watching Harry Potter, I think, and everybody in there looks like a duck. Anyway, it's not the point.
I want to mention
our transitions are not much better than the movie.
The opening scene.
This movie sucked. That's a duck.
I thought that was a huge surprise. Just seeing those random aliens.
Oh,
get exploring.
Yeah.
That was a huge bonus.
Yeah. I mean, we know
that's where the budget went, by the way.
It's funny because about when they started getting eaten and floating, I was like, wow, this movie is 100% a cartoon movie. I'm like, there is no difference between this and, like, The Incredibles, like, except The Incredibles looked a lot better. But, you know, like, and it's absurd. And I guess this was interesting because this was a prequel comic direct lead-in. I mean, we know this is what happens from the prequel comic and stuff, but I don't think that makes any difference to anybody, really.
Did any of you guys see this in 3D?
I did, yeah.
No.
Did it add anything?
No, the Green Lantern effects look cool, and I mean, honestly, the problem with 3D now is that if they throw stuff at the screen to let you know you're watching something in 3D, it takes you out of it. But then if it's doing its job, you don't notice it's in 3D about 10 minutes into it. You just kind of absorb it as it's being absorbed. You know, all special effects look better in 3D, but that's really the best you can get out of it. I mean, it wasn't as dark as a lot of 3D movies, even though it was completely in the dark.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because I got a lot of complaints that it was.
Well,
dark.
It's a dark movie, and then I think it's 3D has to be projected a specific way, and a lot of people, a lot of projectionists in movie theaters are just kids. You know, they don't really know how to use a projector and stuff, so you end up getting that kind of shit happening. I want to say I like how they sidestepped very easily the fact that there's been like at least 600 pages worth of comic book story to explain why Abin Sur was flying a spaceship, and the movie just literally sidesteps it in one line of dialogue. They're like, oh, he was evacuating people. Fuck off. Like, that's it. They don't need to like get into it any more than that, you know. And I think the opening action sequence with Abin Sur and Parallax like really got me pumped for the movie. And like I said, the first like – even the jet fighting stuff and House flashback to his dad didn't really bother me. I mean, it was really cranking along till about an hour into it, and I realized like nothing had happened. You know, it was, you know, and it's like, which would be interesting in a movie that had emotional depth and stuff, but no such luck here.
Well, not to harp on what the fans think, but there were a lot of complaints about Martin Jordan scene, where he just takes off and completely crashes before he even gets high. Anybody got a problem with the way Hal's father died or how that scene handled at all?
No, I think it was pretty exciting. I mean, I think it's more dramatic the way it's done in the comics where he just crashes in the air and Hal doesn't get to see him and stuff. But I think the way – I like watching a little kid get a bomb blown up in his face and go flying is always great.
I thought the pushback was awesome.
Great, yeah.
That was good. But I would have liked to see a little bit more emphasis on like what they mentioned in the comics where Hal's father knows he's going to crash, but he instead of ejecting when he knows he could hurt someone, you consciously see him try to avoid the people. It kind of seems like he just went up, went down. Boom.
Yeah, that I always thought was kind of like pandering, you know, like it's one of those things where it's like you can't just be doing something spectacular and die. You have to be doing something spectacular and rescue a baby and die. It's like, I mean, his dad's not exactly a hero, and you don't need to make his dad a hero. Dad doesn't need to be like.
How would it be a hero? He doesn't want to kill his kid. That's a pretty simple reason to avoid.
Because the comic makes it clear that he crashes deliberately in a way that kills him instead of risking the potential of killing other people. That's the whole point of writing it like that. I mean, that's if you don't understand that, then I don't know how you can read. I mean, like, besides that, it's like it's just – I don't think that's necessary. I like – it's fine the way it happens in the movie. I just think his dad should die in a plane crash. You don't need to have any more than that. I mean, it's not like – you don't need to be having him being saving people's lives, and this movie is not about saving lives at all anyway, so it's not really, especially considering in the scene where he first uses his ring, a bunch of people he got fired beat him up, which he deserves, and then he murders them all.
he murders them by accident.
And a lot of people, like, what was he thinking he was doing? You know, he picks up some shit to throw at them and then ends up making a green fist and punches them all through walls and stuff. Do these guys get their jobs back after they come back to life? I mean,
I would assume so.
Because
I would assume they have to go on disability after that.
The guy said I lost my job because he – so presumably they already were fired.
Yeah. Like, apparently Carol was like, hey, you're fired. And then the next day she was like,
because
I'll call them tomorrow.
Because I feel like the thing is Hal tries to quit. And then the guy tries to fire him, and Carol says, no, you're not fired, and you're not allowed to quit. And yet she's like, I have to lay off like 600 people, but you're still going to work here. And then those guys beat him up because he deserves it, and then later they throw a party because it turns out Hal somehow saved the money anyway, even though we all thought he ruined it and stuff. So essentially it's like, didn't he learn his lesson there? Like if his whole lesson is like he's so reckless, he'd cost all these people their jobs and money. But then if it worked out in the long run, it's like, well, what was the conflict in the first place? I mean, it looks like everything worked out fine anyway, like.
Hal learned the lesson of no matter how reckless he is, everything works out.
Or Carol will be there to save my ass.
Yeah, and it's like Carol,
the great moral of the movie.
She, Carol, how'd you pull it off? She's like, I'm a savvy businesswoman, and by that I mean they were impressed by your flying skills. Like that's not business sense. That's stupid.
I'm glad I hired you.
My savvy business sense was to know you since I was six and hire you. That was my savvy business sense. So what do we all think about the? I guess cameos from the other Green Lanterns. I mean, I guess we could get into the fact that the feature we only saw a couple of Green Lanterns featured briefly, but I mean, what else could we really have gotten? I mean, I don't mind that Tomar. I'm glad that Tomar Rae is the first GL that he meets, because for me, besides Abinsur, obviously, because for me it's important because in the comics, Tomar Rae is the first GL he meets.
Michael Clark Duncan, the Green Lantern.
Oh, I did not like his voice. Yeah. I liked it in the trailer, but
you know, it sounded like Michael Clark Duncan. Like it's kind of like typecast. I mean. Besides the fact that Frankie essentially is what Kilowog sounds like, but a little deeper. You know, I've never heard a Kilowog voice that I've really liked, if I'm being honest. You know, I like when they do something really dramatic. I mean, Dennis Haysbert is not at all how you'd imagine it sound, but Michael Clark Duncan is exactly how they think you'd imagine it to sound, you know? So, I'm not really a big fan of that. I mean, plus the fact that they make it a big black guy, it's kind of like, I don't know, I find that pretty offensive.
Well, I think that's part of the reason why I enjoyed, God, what's his name? Michael Madsen.
Yeah. Because he's not what you'd expect. And
I mean, it's not perfect by any means, but it's just, you know, a grizzled voice that I can attribute to the character. But as far as any of these lanterns showing up from Sal, I got to admit, it is weird seeing Salik or Salak not sitting down.
You're not doing something,
You know, just standing there is a little weird.
Do we, I wasn't clear. Who dies in the attack on Parallax? I know one of them is Issamat, and I think one of them was Green Man, or one of them was not Green Man.
Oh, it was at least three of them.
It was like four of them, and apparently a bunch of them were featured. And I was assuming one of them is Gallia Zed, because that guy's got bad luck across the board. But I didn't really.
That poor floating head, man.
No, I think I saw the Boudica there. I think I saw Boudica.
Did Boudica die?
You saw Boudica die?
No, we'll see. She'll come back. We'll see. She'll come back, and Parallax will have blown off her hand, and then she'll be like, "Hal Jordan did it."
No way.
Well, maybe that's a good way to transition into the Alpha Lanterns and say, hey, suck them out my chest. We got to replace it with a better.
Yeah, like we're going to get Alpha Lanterns. That's an important storyline we're definitely going to see in the next movie. Don't worry about it. well, go ahead.
Yeah, generally speaking on cameos, I can't really complain because you do know that obviously – 3,600 Green Lanterns is freaking expensive, so I didn't expect a balls out fight like we saw in that first draft of the script where, you know, thousands of them rained down
and helped out.
But I did at the end, I did expect them to show up and help
finish him off.
I mean, once the fight had
a little more
to space, I assume, like, come on now. Like, you gotta help now. He's not even on Earth anymore. Yeah. You gotta do something. And it's just like, so you're just gonna sit there and watch him die. And then apparently you were close enough for to save his life. You could have threw a shot in there somewhere.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think
it's disappointing.
Is it me, or did the thought occur to them that if six Green Lanterns don't work, why not send 3,000?
Well, that was the goal. That was the goal when Sinestro called the unprecedented meeting, was to gather them all up to say, hey, we're going to go in there. We're going to try something new. It's called these Yellow Rings. You're going to like them. And We're finally.
I love how your Sinestro's apparently giving like a press conference, like advertising a product. It's like, with these new yellow rings, you'll feel amazing. You'll have brand new power.
Yeah, that was
And for $9.95 a month, you can have a great subscription plan to our energy program.
That was a pretty savage.
No
Yeah, that was a pretty savage hole in the movie where they're like, Green Lanterns are getting killed one at a time in each sector, and then Sinestro has to talk like the Guardians into it, and then he has to talk thousands of people to agree with him, and he's like, I'm going to pick six of you, and they're like, yeah! It's like, why not just take as many of them as you can, you know? I mean, like, is there a reason? You can't. I mean, the movie makes a good point to say that, like, the sectors are vast, and I think they have, like, one or two lines of dialogue which really sells it in a way the comics don't, because the comics have no sense of Green Lanterns and sectors anymore, but, you know, they make a point to say, like, they're really big sectors, and you really are, like, you are stretched out.
I like
you're gonna get wasted. It's, like, it's hard, you know? And so that kind of sells it, but they should have been a little bit more of a kind of, why do they only send six? And then, like, well, we can't beat him with six. We might as well just make this yellow ring. And then Hal shows, like, don't use the yellow ring. If you give in to fear, you'll die. First off, how does he know? I mean, I guess he's seen Parallax or Hector with the yellow energy, but how does he not assume that, like, maybe the ring will work? I mean, it's kind of like he just
– Well, he's assuming that, you know, I almost died giving in to fear.
Yeah, so and, probably going to happen to somebody
else. And my fear would have caused the death of other people.
It
so,
might be.
Hey, don't do what I did.
And then he says to the Guardians, like, and help me save my world. And then for some reason they say no. Like, why don't they just, if anything, send Sinestro with the ring with him? I mean, there's no reason not to help there. And he's like, your world isn't significant in the thing. It's like, wait, I don't understand. When are you going to attack Parallax? I mean, your plan seems to be make one ring, give it to Sinestro, and then that's it. That seems to be your only plan. Why not help Hal in the moment? It's a huge, huge hole in the movie. I mean, it sets up the end where Hal fights Parallax by himself and wins and stuff. And I, for one, as much as I would have liked to see a big Green Lantern battle blowout and stuff, I was happy, actually. Once I realized that it was just going to be Hal fighting Parallax and beating himself, I was like proud of the character. I was like, oh, badass. Good for you, man. Like,
that moment never came for me. I kept assuming, all right, Sinestro and Kilowog are going to just pop so on
literally
through the wall.
Then
he
did it. Wait, yeah, what?
I just kept waiting for the real climax. Like, when is this going to come? Oh, I guess that was it. Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then
that was a very small
transition happened. The worst transition happened when they finally kill Parallax into the sun, and then he shows up on a balcony talking to Carol, and that's how you end the movie.
Great.
It's like,
later.
Why?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, that immortal was totally killed in the sun.
Not to be like whatever with – I don't know if it was in the first draft or not, but it seems very Geoff Johns-y that the bad science wins. You know, he's like, I'm going to fly him into the sun. It's like, how fast is he flying? And at what point does he use a wormhole to get to the sun? Does he have any idea how far away the sun is? I mean, you know, you have to be flying at like millions of miles an hour to get to the sun, you know. And
it takes 5 minutes at the speed of light to get to the
sun. You know, and it's like – and he's flying through asteroid belts, and where does the asteroid belts and stuff? And if he uses a wormhole, does Krona go through the same wormhole? And, you know,
and then these construct jets are going to help him, you know,
drag. And it's worth note, if he can travel at the speed of light to get there, he's going to escape the sun's gravity with no problem.
Yeah, exactly. He could just warp himself out of there. There's no reason to worry about it.
He doesn't even have to warp. He just has to fly in the opposite direction.
And if he manages to get Krona near the sun anyway with warp capability or however he gets up there, he could just warp his ass into the sun. And if Krona's been flying across the universe for, you know, however many years, I'm not sure if the movie makes it clear if he's only been flying around for like a couple of years or 6 months at the beginning of the movie, but presumably he was flying around. But you think he doesn't know how to avoid a sun? I mean, like, come on. Like, he's just so mad at Hal that he's going to run into the sun. I mean, turn away once you realize what you're doing, man.
he's playing chicken. It's like, yeah, follow me to the sun, follow me. Oh, I turned to the side. No.
Yeah, it was clearly blocked by his other half of his body.
Yeah, I mean, it just
– he couldn't see.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Out of his vision.
And, like, just make yourself littler and fly away. Like, you know, because it looks like you just suck up souls for power. Just jump out. You'll be fine, you know. I mean, but – what do you do? I mean, I thought it was kind of cool. I thought it was cool that Hal beat him by himself, and then he sucked him to the sun and punched him into the sun and stuff. And it was really cool to see a giant monster fight a hero. I mean, you think that happens a lot, but it's actually pretty rare in superhero movies. You get to see a gigantic-ass monster.
One thing I did want to know is where would they have even gone after this movie? You have the big bad with the immortal guardian with the fear energy from the universe. How do you top?
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, Parallax isn't even in the comics we're reading now. Isn't even the big bad. I mean, he's like 14th on the totem pole of bad guys and stuff. And yeah, Krona's.
Well, but to be fair, it's Parallax plus.
Yeah, Krona's destroyed. But I mean, like, there's no reason to assume that this is the end-all, be-all of characters and stuff. I mean, presumably the idea being in the next movie we get him fighting Sinestro. And this movie does a pretty decent job of establishing Sinestro as a character. It's as much as people are like, oh, he's perfect for the character. I'm like, he's nothing like Sinestro in the comics at all whatsoever. But, you know.
Well, to be really? Fair, we mostly see Sinestro. So? We mostly see Sinestro in the comics after he's gone evil, nutso, yellow.
Even if – even yeah, I guess that's true. But, I mean, there's – you know, I don't get any sense of this character that this is – this is the character that we get from the comics. That
we're is it reading. Too much logic for you?
What?
I mean, Sinestro here is great. Level-headed.
Yeah. Evil I think guy. It was just one of those things.
Remember Hal and Sinestro were supposed to even somewhat friendly towards each other, and then Hal goes to Sinestro's plant and he realizes, hey, this guy's pretty much forcing dictatorship on these people to keep them in order.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like Sinestro's a real team player. It seems like he's a real great guy who really cares about other people. He is really upset when people die, you know, and he's kind of like a noble dude, you know, and he's willing to kind of go the extra distance, and he just doesn't like Hal because Abin Sur's dead, and that's really it. I mean, and he's a bit racist, and that's really the most you get of him and stuff. But in terms of
– I think it's a little more than – I think it's like if Michael Jordan left the Chicago Bulls, the general manager of the Bulls isn't going to like the next draft pick. He's going to say, hey, you're not quite Michael Jordan.
You're not Michael Jordan.
Yeah, you're a first-round pick, but you're not Michael Jordan.
Yeah, and then one of the things to tone in terms of like Mark Sinestro, Mark Strong. Mark Sinestro. Mark Strong.
Mark Sinestro.
Mark Strong. Everybody likes Mark Strong. He's a nice guy. I've only ever seen Mark Strong play two characters. That's the bad guy he played in Kick-Ass and the same character he plays in every other movie.
You mean Mark Strong.
Yeah, that's what I said. Mark Strong. Mark Strong only plays two characters. It's the one character playing Kick-Ass, and every single other movie he's in, he plays this character. You know, he plays the kind of like, you know, smarmy, like evilish, big-headed a British dick dude. And that's really it. I mean, so it's not like, yeah, you don't really get any kind of like, I don't know. He was a good enough character. So I think the idea being in the next one, if you had a villain be like the best friend of the good guy, regardless of whether or not he was the strongest guy, it's kind of like that's a legit emotional arc, et cetera, et cetera. You know, like, come on, Spider-Man 3, he fights his best friend Harry, and that's awesome. And Harry's not nearly as strong as any of the other guys he fought, but that's not what it matters. You know, he's strong enough to fight him, and it's exciting because they used to be bros. Whereas in this movie.
Well, what did you think about Sinestro, Andrew?
I thought he's the highlight of the movie myself.
Yeah. Next to Blake, of course.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I think...
That assault on my ears.
He comes across as, like, the tough ninja dude. Like, every time there's an action movie, there's always one tough ninja dude. He comes across as that guy. But I think Ryan Reynolds, the character he plays in this movie, which is not Hal Jordan from the comic, but the character he plays in this movie really does steal the show. Because I think I don't know. I think there's parts of it where he reacts the way that is unique to the situation. I mean, it was cool to see Tomar make that construct that he made in the commercials where I said, that's an awesome looking construct. And then he even says, that's awesome. I'm like, that's awesome that you thought it was awesome because I thought it was awesome, you know? And it was good that when Sinestro shows up wants to fight him, he's like, all right, I'll fight you. It's just, you know, he's kind of, he seems like a cool guy.
You're talking about the big spindly
stuff?
Yeah,
I think it was awesome. It was awesome. And that's kind of like, you know, I think Hal Jordan, I think it's one of those things where Mark Strong was cool and everything, but you know, I mean, you know, you couldn't do a whole movie about that guy, you know, but and Hal Jordan, as much as his journey is overstays its welcome. I don't know. What do you guys think about the music? I don't think the music even happened. Was there even music?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was actually one of my few bullet points about the really negative feelings I had about the movie is the score was just lacking. I mean, I don't even
remember the score.
Yeah, I remember
the last. It really needed music, and it was garbage, like some kind of rock music mixed in with. I don't mind rock music, just not generic bullshit. Like,
I don't feel like there was any kind of
theme. It needed a theme. Like,
Not that necessarily needs like a Danny Elfman Batman, but something, you know, iconic that would, you know,
it should
play throughout.
It should have a theme.
I mean, yeah. Superman's got his music, Batman's got his music. Why can't Green Lantern have his?
Well, there was
no
build up type,
nothing like
moment like that though. There was no.
I mean, you could have had something start playing in the background while he's doing the elf the second time when he's fighting off Parallax. You could have had something building up while he's speaking. And then he flies up to space, and it should be playing in full blast, whatever the theme
is. But there's no march, like when Clark is running off the top of the Daily Planet and unbuttoning his shirt.
There's a couple of parts like that. I mean, this movie's full of epic. You could always have the opening
Race starts.
Then
where he starts to fly and stuff, and there's plenty of.
Yeah, you get the open.
Okay, the music there where he drifts, where he falls off, and he learns to fly. I thought that was fine. It was a nice little happy melody.
What we're talking about is, I mean, I think what we're saying is that it needs a theme, like a theme song that you can go like ba da ba da ba da ba da, like for the rest of time, thinking that's the Green Lantern theme song. That's the biggest problem I think with the Marvel movies.
Well, maybe that's kind of
that's a movie's fault, isn't it?
Maybe that's kind of fallen by the wayside.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's basically like the Marvel movies. They don't really have. The couple of them have.
No.
Like, what's the Iron Man?
Like, what's the Iron Man theme?
Oh, AC/DC.
I am Iron Man.
Oh, yeah, I guess it's that.
But then Spider Man has. There is a Spider Man theme. It's just you can't hum it. It's like. It's awful.
I mean, if Harry Potter was able to get a theme, mind you, they do have.
For Spider Man, you always could use the theme song from the Japanese giant robot Spider-Man.
No, but I mean, and they use the theme song of Spider-Man. But the point, in fact, is the movie should have a theme. I mean, Hulk, the first Hulk with Eric Bana had a theme. It just wasn't a very good theme. I'm trying to think, what the fuck? God damn, you're right. Thor didn't have really a theme. I don't remember any music in that. And that's kind of the worst. I mean, you really should have a theme.
I feel like Thor had some kind of a theme.
I feel like I never remember the music.
A heroic theme.
That's what I'm saying. You never remember, but you definitely remember it. Dun, 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 dun. You remember that, you know, from Harry Potter. You remember it, you know. Like, that's like cornerstone of movie franchise.
Well, isn't that part of the movie? Like, the movie has to generate those.
Especially given, like, the militaristic nature of the core, there should have been something like a... what's the guy that did the score for, like, Aliens? And
there's plenty of epic moments. I think you could have hinted at the score in the beginning, and then when you Warner. Actually reveal...
Something like Warner.
Yeah, when you actually reveal, like, the battery and Tomar's talking about it, hit the theme then. And then hint the theme all these other parts where Hal's doing stuff, and then maybe when he does that big, willful, big speech when Parallax is about to eat him, and then he makes the bubble and flies right through him, play the theme then. Ta-da. And then just play the theme throughout the rest of it, and then he's kicking ass.
Didn't Horner do this movie?
I think Newton Howard did this movie. Well, that's actually, you know, it's funny because you talk about, it's like the Dark Knight movies, the Batman Begins, the Dark Knight. They have a theme that plays in Batman Begins, but the music is designed to not have a theme. Like, it's designed to be, like, building towards a theme. And then, unfortunately, when they made Dark Knight, they still didn't write a theme, so they just kept the same building theme and stuff. But Joker has a theme. I mean, if you heard it, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that's actually really distinct music, and it's the Joker theme and stuff. So, I don't know. Yeah. I think it could have done – I think that's a legit point. I can't imagine why they didn't just – get better music. I mean, you know, I mean, they had all the time in the world, you know. Everything else was done.
Well, did they? Because, I mean, we heard about the reshoots that was happening in February, and then the added budget probably kept the film away from Newton. So maybe they didn't have enough time to put together a solid score.
What do we think they reshot? I feel like they reshot a lot of the Sinestro stuff.
I think the LA Times put out that article. Deadline.
Deadline.
Andrew mentioned Deadline put out an article that said there were a lot of hands on this project.
Yeah.
And that the focus of the movie was being pulled in separate directions from the studio.
Constructed by committee.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder now, like, way back there was all these reports about, it's been a tumultuous production. It's like, well, really it was? But now it's like, maybe it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can kind of see that.
We heard that with X-Men First Class, that it was going through problem after problem. And everything leaked, like, from that movie, like, ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, every problem they ever had was out there. With this, there was no problems going through.
And then you kept hearing
the
undercurrent that maybe there was problems with nobody was talking about and stuff. I think Warner's just better
they just kept
at handling their shit.
They just kept a quirk. Yeah,
Warner's is a little better than Fox.
Yeah. And I think X-Men First Class, you could see it there too. That movie is deeply flawed, you know, and goes from really high highs to like really, really low lows. And that movie is going to sustain itself and be a legitimate, like a legitimately well-liked part of that franchise because of the really strong parts in the movie and stuff. But I mean, this movie too, I mean, like I said, this has some really strong parts, but it never really peaks, never really gets amazing, you know, and it reminds me of like, and I know some of you guys hate it, but the Dragon Ball live action movie. It's one of those
Evolution.
Die and get cancer.
Which again,
I just saw a Justin chat one.
Yeah, which again, people hate and everything. It's a perfectly serviceable family kids movie. You know, it's got everything. It's a very expensive looking movie, you know, and it even hits all the bullet points of the Dragon Ball or whatever, you know, but the point in fact is that there's nothing really that brings that movie over the top. And not for nothing, the action in it, there's not a lot of action in it. And that's, you know, not to be like, a fan
and the characters nothing like
not,
the actual
not to
character.
Be like a fanboy about it, you know, but there wasn't a lot of action in this movie either. I mean, you know, there what the action we got was good because Martin Campbell's a great action director. But I mean, come on, every James Bond movie has got like 4 or 5 20-minute sequences in it, you know. And this movie wasn't even just barely an hour and a half. I mean, come on.
It kind of saddened me the fact that one of my biggest disappointment was I kept waiting for more action. It's like when you first see him do some action, you're like, all right, we're finally get action, and then he spends like 40 minutes after getting the ring not using it, and you're like, come on.
You're seeing his girlfriend. Where was the montage? They might think it's corny, but where's the goddamn montage where he's saving kittens and, you know, there's at least one or two.
Oh, that.
If they had to speed through things, at least the montage would have been serviceable.
I mean, yeah, they did do the arbitrary rescuing of a minority, you know, at the end when he rescues the black lady on the ground, which they needed every superhero movie to the arbitrary rescuing of the minority, you know. But like, other than that, it's like, what the hell does he even do? Get his ass kicked by Hector.
Was the deleted scene where they got to bring out the angry black guy before he saves that woman, and it's like, oh, sorry.
Well, the thing is, he didn't want to be that hero. He wanted to be the hero, but he didn't think himself confident enough to go out there doing the things that a Superman would do.
Well, let's get into the spider sense for a minute. I know some people had a problem with the spider sense.
The ring. The fact that it doesn't talk.
Yeah.
It was ill-defined.
I think
really it seems like every time he supposedly heard the ring, it's like there was never enough attention drawn to it.
Well, I think it signaled – a lot of people were like, well, how did he know – the big hole in the movie, how did he know where Hector's lab was? Like, no, that's stupid. Obviously, the ring just told him where the lab was because it was reading off the parallax energy. Duh. But –
They could have given the ring a small voice or something.
But we don't know.
Well, I think that's.
The ring knows.
I think it's. I read it from just watching, and I'm like, it's beeping because Parallax is doing something. That's why, and it only beeped once or twice in the movie, and it was only really reacting when like bad shit was going down and stuff. But it's kind of like, you know, why didn't it beep when? Why is it? I mean, he controls a whole sector. Why is it only beeping like 3 times in the movie? Why isn't it beeping every single time someone gets like murdered or robbed or?
Maybe it was a pretty good day for that sector.
Yeah, I mean, why didn't it beep when he murdered those 3 guys? Why didn't it just take them to the hospital, like, you know, like in Morse code or whatever?
Maybe it dictates what's worthy of a Green Lantern. I mean, 3 guys getting killed, that probably happens every planet, every sector, every day.
Well, hold on. Which came first? The punch he threw came after he went to Oa, right?
No, that's before. That's right when he gets taken to Oa.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because they kidnapped him.
In fact, right after that's when it taken him.
Yeah, right after
he got taken right there. Because it'd been awkward if he was standing there with 3 dead bodies.
Yeah. Okay, so there's an excuse why he didn't take them to the hospital.
That's fine. That's fine. Does the ring beep when he has to stop the helicopter? I don't even know if he – I think he just throws it on. I think the ring only beeps like twice in the movie.
Well, the ring is aware of its surrounding. It knows what Hal did and what
random blowjob did.
They did make it a point to kind of show that the ring was sort of hardwiring itself into his nervous system. Yeah. That one scene.
Yeah, and he downloads information.
Well, I do agree with that. Right. I wish there would have been more indication for the audience.
More what?
There should have been more indication for the audience is my main problem.
I think there's plenty of indication. I think it's just it draws attention to itself as being like, why does it only beep there, and what does that mean? You know what I mean?
That's why I think it would have been better if it at least verbally spoke why.
I mean, we got 20 minutes of Tomar telling us everything about the Guardians and Krona, but we can't get 2 seconds of, you know, ring information.
Here's my problem with the ring.
Yeah, Yellow Fear Energy Detected. We couldn't have gotten that.
I agree. There could have been a I think the problem with the ring speaking is this is a problem you run into in the comics. Why is it only talking sometimes? And it used to be like it didn't actually talk until somebody asked it to talk. But now it just talks completely arbitrarily. Like it's like, you are doing this wrong. And it's like, why would you even tell me that as opposed to like whatever? But the problem is in the movie, I think if they would have added a ring voice to it, it would have been one more character. And the movie was already overloaded as it is. And that's probably why they decided not to do it. Because they would have been like, you know, the all fairness, that's a pretty good marketing gimmick, a little ring that's like your best friend and stuff. But how much would they be able to resist the effort of being like, well, let's make it a little ring that's his best friend. You know, it's like, no, let's not.
It's much easier to produce a light up ring than a
Or hell, if you didn't want a voice, you could have just had a little text box pop up.
And
like, again, freaking page.
And they probably always tell themselves, well, in the sequel, he can just talk in the ring is like
to Hal from Ring Fred. OMG, Yellow Fear Energy over there.
And it's one of those things that people always say the origin movies are the worst, and that's total bullshit. I mean, you know, the half these superheroes ever created after their origin stories, all they do is fight supervillains, and that's it. You know, I mean, you get like how many? I mean, even think about characters that have had a lot of good stories, like Batman. I mean, how many you know, Batman's had a ton of good stories, but how long has Batman been around? 70 years? And you're saying you can maybe name about 20 good Batman stories. That's what, like two every couple of years? That's ridiculous, you know? So origin stories are actually a pretty safe bet. And one of the things I didn't like about, I liked that they got into the thing, but I mean, a couple, like I said, the battery not charging right, you guys are complaining about the ring not talking and stuff. It's like a couple of the essential elements of the fact, I didn't like the fact that they didn't indicate any kind of power depletion. I mean, like, he just passes out at the end. He doesn't, like, get power.
No power ring at so-and-so percent.
It seems like they were hearkening back to the 24-hour thing and not so much the gas tank thing, yeah. But it's never really explained.
You know, the whole idea of the 24-hour thing is extremely broken as a concept. I've got infinite energy for 24 hours.
It doesn't make any sense. It's just
like, it kind of does. I mean, it kind of does. I mean, if you imagine that there's a window between the battery and the ring, or
creates a temporary tether to the superpower battery.
That's for a certain amount of time, after which it expires.
Yeah, but
it kind of makes.
If you think about it, though, that is just.
You know, if you think about that would mean that the only reason the battery even exists is kind of like a lockout. It's like only authorized person can tether the ring, and he has 24 hours before that runs out of power, and no one else can use it.
Well, it's kind of intermediary. It's kind of a. You know, something.
You can't get your power without us, the Guardian. So here's your key.
It's an arbitrary. Yeah. It was an arbitrary decision made on it, just to make it more interesting and like put some conflict into it. But I think they didn't really think it out, because you know, you also got to think about, these are the same stories where Hal could actually make time move faster or slow down. So it didn't actually matter if his ring had a 24-hour charge. He could just say it was an hour earlier and stuff. But he never seemed to realize that, you know. So there's a lot of like whatever. I think once they introduce the idea that it's like a gas tank, it actually makes a lot more sense. Though it's kind of, it loses the whole has to charge every 24 hours thing. And that's kind of like a, oh yeah, you know. I mean, I think it's, I can't think of anything in the world that needs, that's fully energized, except that it runs out of juice every day. You know what I mean? Like that. I mean, I it's easier for me to compare it to a car or my phone, you know, or anything like that. You know, it's I personally just can't conceptualize something that runs 100% until it just runs out at the end of the day. You know what I mean?
Well, I think a phone is a pretty good.
I always thought it was more of a security thing, like the Guardians, like say someone just snatches up a ring. I mean, before it was eventually. Like DNA locked or whatever. Like someone snatches up a ring, the worst they can do is fuck around within 24 hours and then.
Yeah, but then if you think about it,
shut off the battery. Or
if they steal your battery,
yeah, but then, but then if you think about it,
well, no, but
technically
they can control the battery.
They can do anything unlimitedly.
Yeah,
for 24 hours, as opposed to if they only had like say 100 points, they could use 50 points for this, 60 points for that, et cetera, et cetera. You know,
which makes it the whole situation. John Stewart, if he wanted to rebuild the planet pre the limit, he could. It would just be there for a day, and then you know, have to do it again, or he'd have to like keep recharging it just before the day ran
out.
Well,
then we're getting into like what do these constructs really mean? Because you know, up until Kyle Rayner used to make constructs that were permanent. You know, he just give a guy's back his legs, be like, "Have a nice day," and the guy just had legs. Like it didn't go away when the ring ran out of charge. It didn't this and that. You know, and
how about the fact that we didn't get the John Stewart cameo that we all assumed was going to be there.
Well,
the bar.
It was filmed.
It would have made sense for the bar.
Well, I always thought that was stupid because they cast an unknown or relatively unknown actor.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, why are they wasting that? Like, why not, like...
I think that's exactly
what it was, yeah.
You just know that if and when Green Lantern 2 happened, they would have, the studio would have, no,
recast
we're not going to...
Anyway, yeah.
We're going to have to recast this guy anyway. Yeah. So.
Well, maybe, I mean, not to harken back to this, too much, but the whole pulled in other directions thing, a lot of people on our site are saying pray for a director's cut. So
you know, I'm hopeful for that. We missed a lot somehow, and that it was already made.
You say director's cut, and I mean, Martin Campbell's a great director. I don't mean to spit on him, whatever, but
not even director's cut, but from director's cut and deleted scenes is, I mean...
Yeah, well, there's definitely some deleted scenes.
Would either fix this movie for you?
Well, there's not, like, I don't see any fundamental... My fundamental flaws are there's too much of certain things, you know? I mean, if you would add more action, but there's no deleted scene that's going to add that, and if you've restructured it...
Bar fight? Really? That's not enough action for you?
What, in the bar fight, or just...
I mean, because the John Stewart cameo revolving around...
Oh, I don't think they would have had a whole bar fight, because then they would have had to have two fights
in
2 minutes.
It
would have just been him in a bar making a dirty face at him, and then probably having some kind of back and forth about the...
Like a punch is thrown, cut to the next scene.
I don't even think that. I think it would have been like, he probably would have said something about...
Like the Wolverine cameo? Ooh, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I'm sure everybody... It's been weeks. I'm sure everybody's seen it, but...
All right. Yeah, okay. Like the Wolverine cameo.
But even then, it would have been... I think it would have been... Because he said it was like... The actor implied it was something like the comics where there was an Air Force versus Marines thing. I think you would have seen John in full uniform. You might have seen... There's all these pictures on the wall. And then somebody could have said, what is a Marine doing in a pilot's bar? And then the Marine could have been like, blah, blah, blah. And that's it. You really would have just got a pissing contest. You probably wouldn't have gotten a fist fight. Because then you would have one fist fight and then another fist fight? I mean, though it could be explained, that's why Hal leaves the bar, because he gets punched in the face, to go outside to get punched in the face again, but I doubt it.
I feel sorry for Hal that day.
Screw him, he got a bunch of people fired, and he got an invincibility ring right afterwards. I don't feel bad for him.
John could have just been sitting there at the bar behind Carol. I don't know. He could have turned up to walk away, and we just see Stewart on his tag.
Yeah, you
know?
I wouldn't have minded a cameo. It just would have been a little too – this movie's already so full of, like I said, Marvelisms and Marvelitis. I mean, it's what I'm going to call it from now on, where any movie, all it does is
make – Marvelitis.
It's
fair enough.
You know?
If they wanted to cameo someone, they should have just had a Guy Gardner, 20 feet ahead of Hal before he got the ring, just turns the corner, and then Hal gets the ring as he's closer.
It's one of those things where, they could have just pick a popular black actor and put him in there, and all of a sudden now you have Ryan Reynolds, who's a really well-liked actor – who's popular, and then another actor who's really well liked and popular is supposed to just dude. I mean,
they're gone. I don't know how to tell you this, but there's only about 4 or 5 popular black actors.
Throw Jimmy Fox in that. Fuck.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess you do run the show down.
Make it Samuel Jackson. Let him have the multiple role thing, just like Ryan Reynolds with Deadpool.
Point in fact is that star power. If you're gonna cast Jon Stewart and you're gonna cast another lead, then who might be in more than one movie. You cast star power. You don't cast – you do Marvel. Marvelitis. Just get as many famous people in your movies as you can.
I think if they put a director's cut on the DVD release and the movie turns out to be drastically better, like people say Daredevil is, I don't even see that much of a difference in those movies. But if we do get a Martin Campbell director's cut, which I don't think we will get, but if we do,
I don't think he's interested in making one.
I think this process might have ruined.
He's already said he's unwilling to do a second one.
But
not the one's going to happen. But
the guy that does not like doing sequels, he's already said I'm not coming back for a sequel.
What do you mean? He's done sequels.
He did both Zorro movies and didn't he'd done 2 James Bonds, so
2 relaunches, right?
Yeah.
Well, James Bond's kind of, I'm not sure if you call them sequels.
He likes
sometimes.
Reinvention. He likes setting the stage. But he doesn't like continuing.
Yeah, I think he just wasn't really in love with the material, so he doesn't really care. But I think and I think it's probably the same thing. There's too many cooks in the pot, so he's like, kind of, what's the point of me being here? So, and he's not really.
Here's fucking Geoff Johns telling me, what's Hal's motivation in this scene.
Exactly, and it's not. Come on, it's not like my.
And who needs that?
Martin Campbell's a really good action director, and he's got a good sense of story beats and where to put the camera and stuff. But other than that, he's a very superficial, shallow director. So it's not like we're losing a lot. And in terms of director's cuts, I mean. You guys have seen Casino Royale, right? Casino Royale is a great movie. Casino Royale is like 6 movies, and it's endless.
Okay.
I mean, it's a wonderful movie. I love that movie, but it's endless. And every hour, the movie transforms into a completely different movie and then goes on for another hour and a half. I mean, and even after the Baccarat games – or the – sorry, Texas Hold'em game's over, it still goes on for another fucking hour and a half. The movie's over, and that's – so I don't think this guy knows how to edit his movies. This is the shortest movie he's ever made. I think it's just I don't think there's a director's cut. I don't think he sat in the editing room. I think he just shot the movie and went away. So I think.
Have you seen Edge of Darkness?
Speaking of Edge of Darkness, that was a movie that didn't have a lot of action. I mean, it was fast paced at times, but it didn't have a lot of action either, and it still worked well.
I'm not. That's the what's it called? The Mel Gibson movie. Right? Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
That was like right when Mel Gibson became Mel Gibson. So I kind of like ignoring stuff he was doing.
It was before that.
It was a little before that, yeah.
What do you guys think of the suit, the way the suit looked and everything, and the mask especially?
I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
I thought it didn't work when we got too close to it. The scenes where Carol hugs him or the first scene where she gets up close to him and it's like, look at you. And she's like pointing out the obvious flaws in the costume.
Yeah.
She's like, this second skin. I'm like, this does not look like a second skin. It looks like glow.
Yeah.
I thought other than that, it looked fine.
Yeah.
His eyes were creepy as hell.
Yeah, his eyes were a little creepy.
You didn't like the whiteout? I thought the whiteout was
cool. It looked cool. I think it looked cool. I think the mask was probably the weakest part, just the way it was designed. It wasn't designed for his face very well, I think.
And the fact that he kept putting it on, it's like you don't really need it.
What are you doing? Just because it's a part of the costume design of the character. I actually think the costume worked really well. I thought it looked really cool.
I did like the Carol Hal scene where she pointed out the flaws, like you were saying.
Yeah, she's like,
because at the beginning of the scene, it was like, It's like, oh god, is she really gonna pretend like she doesn't know who he is?
Yeah, I was confused. I thought she was like, being sarcastic, and then when she realized, I was like, oh.
Then it's like, oh, okay, she knows who it is. Okay,
yeah, fine. Yeah. Jeez. It's like
it was amazing. She's amazing.
It had the potential to be very stupid, but it came out all right. I thought.
And it was cute.
It was nice that someone finally pointed out the obvious of I've known you my whole life. There's no way I couldn't like know
Clark,
you.
The Clark Kent with the glasses.
Yeah,
thing.
It's cute, it's but then the problem is it throws a monkey wrench into all your other movies, but not only that, but the rest of this movie. I mean. Because then Wes makes the point.
To be fair, he was doing the cheap Batman voice,
but then what is
never fully.
Yeah, but Wes makes the point. Like, why does he wear the mask then? Because it's established in the first scene when someone.
Well, he does it for the rest of
which is
the city.
And then if people started taking pictures of him, they'd start being
yeah,
oh,
obviously.
Because there was a news report about Hal Jordan earlier in the film, so locally he's a celebrity more or less. So it wouldn't really even be like a thing. People would immediately be like, "Oh, Hal Jordan, what are you wearing that ridiculous interface?"
That's Hal.
I think the costume otherwise looked really cool. I'm actually a fan.
You know they. You know, they should really do that in the comics. They should really just have everyone just find out it's Hal. Hal just dropped the disguise. You know what? We're the city without fear. I'm the hero without fear. I'm Hal Jordan.
I didn't think his identity was a secret in the comics. Is this still a secret? I thought people knew who he was.
I think it is. I'm pretty sure it is.
I'm pretty sure a lot of people are figuring it out.
Except from the general and the Air Force.
Yeah, the entire military knows. And all the Justice League knows. And all their friends and family know. And his family knows. And I guess – I don't know. I think it's one of those things where it's like why is it even a secret? It's not like – I never even get secret – secret identities by themselves don't actually make any sense. The whole idea where it's like, but they'll kill my family. It's not like cops' families get killed all the time by gangsters they put in jail. It's not like if I arrest a drug dealer as a police officer, he's going to –
Well, they don't fight the fucking Joker and shit.
Yeah, but even then
–
But then you're – it's like it's almost like you're justifying it by creating villains that would only attack you for a secret. It's like just because Batman's got that one guy who would get after him, everyone else has to fucking fret about it. And like – and even then, we were already hiding our secret identities before we even knew.
Never know. So. You never know what's around the next corner.
Well, let's focus back on the movie for a second. If he does – So, I mean, since she does know, and looking ahead anyway, they're already – by the end of the movie, they're a couple. I mean, it's not really – I don't think he cares.
I'm wondering like the part where he goes and confronts Hector in the hangar. Hector's like, come alone, Hal, and then he shows up, and he's like, oh, hey, Hal, how's it going? He's still wearing his mask. I'm like, take your mask off. It's rude. It's like wearing a hat inside everybody's house. Yeah. It's like, take your hat off. You're inside.
He's like, hey, the flight over.
Asshole.
Flying really low.
It'll be rude. Otherwise, I like the costume. I think a lot of people are the Tron stuff. I think they look great. I think the fact that little tiny crackles of energy were happening, it looked like he was kind of like splintering and stuff when he was really using it. That looks pretty cool.
Yeah. It's like the costume was kind of like adding to his muscle mass to explain like how he's able to have like super strength and shit. Like you could see like it's like an extra layer of muscle on top of his skin.
Yeah,
it works in that sense.
Yeah, I think it looked cool, and I think it was a unique idea about having the costume, the way they played it, and it worked. I mean, it looks like a CG costume and stuff, but it kind of works because it's the same reason that, like, the George.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, well, it's like the prequel movies. Everybody complains about the Star Wars prequel movies, and the fact that not only is everything in a blue screen and CG, but he even whitewashes the real stuff so it looks like it's CG because he's like, well, you know what? It doesn't look real, but I justify it by making the real stuff that looks like it comparable. And this was like that. I mean, once you see him in OA, you're like, well, everything looks like that, so it's not a big deal. It's almost like it's not CG. It's like outer spacey and stuff. Though Parallax looked like a big bunch of like claymation rolling all over buildings and stuff like that. I like the Parallax design. I didn't mind the Cloud Galactus. People threw a big fit, but nobody wanted to see a purple dude in shorts, you know? I mean, so
I did.
Well, you don't know anything, but like, you know, it's like I think the Cloud was fine. I think the Cloud in this looked kind of scary and cool. I mean, the designs in the comic are cool, but I mean, why not? It looked all right.
Had we got the hooded midget Krona in shackles, I would have been perfectly fine with that.
Yeah.
I would perfectly fine with fully tall Krona.
Ugh, not me.
I think that would have just been another thing for them to try to explain, and we didn't need any more explanation during this movie.
They didn't even mention Krona's name. They just straight up said it was Parallax. Like, you know, they just like completely bypassed the Krona aspect.
Yeah, I think they called him the Mad Guardian once.
Yeah, they said there was a Guardian who went nuts, and I don't think they don't name any of the Guardians. They don't give Ganthet a name. Don't say Said or whatever, and I assume that the one that was talking to him was Ganthet and stuff, but you know, they don't give them names and stuff. And again, I think that's the same reason Ring doesn't talk, and that we didn't get a charge. They probably were trying to simplify it as much as possible and stuff. But
yeah,
I think they lose.
I mean, because you spent 20 minutes telling us about it. I mean, this is a lot to take in.
Yeah, they lose a little bit. I mean, I think except for the fact that the Sinestro business that happens in the mid-credits, this was designed enough to kind of encapsulate every single aspect of Green Lantern's story. We would never need a sequel if not for, again, the fact that the whole Sinestro gimmick, you know, the fact that we all as fans know that he's a bad guy from the comics.
Is that where we want to end this episode, talking about this final scene?
Well, I think that it points out a lot of things that I was talking about were wrong with the movie. It's clearly Marvelitis. I think as much as the last couple of Marvel movies have ended with these kind of hints of something, like as much as it's cool to see Robert Downey Jr. show up at the end of the Hulk movie, if you really think about it, it's like that's a fucking waste of my time. Like it's just Robert Downey Jr. standing there saying something. It's not actually Iron Man fighting the Hulk. You know, it just implies to me that it's going to happen in 3 years. At least in this, we get straight up Sinestro wearing his Sinestro uniform, being Sinestro.
That's a good way to look at it.
But which is cool. So you go to the extreme, but then it's so Marvelitis because a lot of people had discussions about this, and I agree that it's like it's completely antithetical to the character and what happens to the character in the movie. You know, and not for nothing, if you were going to make a sequel, which they're probably not, but if they were going to make a sequel, you're literally skipping over all the most interesting stuff that happens to that character in the first half of the movie. You know, like,
well, it's all right. Because I've seen that opinion shared on the website. I don't think you necessarily have to worry about that problem. Yes, it does take away from that effect, like, oh, he already has the ring, or he already stole the ring back. Yeah, but if, God willing, you know, we get a sequel, you can always just say, he took the ring off, you know?
He puts it in his pocket, but he keeps it on at certain points.
You lose.
Hal visits his world.
Lose the cool element of him deciding to take the ring, putting it on. I think what they would end up doing if they ever did do a sequel, which, again, they probably won't, but if they did, they would just reiterate that scene within the movie. They would just have that scene happen again. They probably didn't even use the same couple of shots. They would just justify it. So then essentially what you're getting is 100% superficial scene where it's just like, look, he's going to wear the ring. But it doesn't actually make any sense to the character because the whole character storyline is that he's a pretty noble, good guy, but he's got one big crook in his ass that he's like, I thought we were the toughest guys in the universe, but we're not. And how can we get tougher? And then Hal shows up and says, well, you don't need to be tougher. You just need to be better at what you're doing. And then at the end of the movie, he's like, Hal, you know what? I was a dick. You are 100% right. Everybody look at Hal. He was right. I mean, like, you don't get a lying ass. You get the sense that
he is pretty much a lying asshole.
Yeah, but we only know that from the comics. Again, you're not using – I mean, the movie context, he's not. Like, the movie context, he's just kind of a dick. But
he's not a dick at all. He's just a guy being presented with – no.
He picked a fight with him, stabbed him in the back, told him he was a shithead.
He basically gave an apology letter at the end.
Yeah, at the end, he was like, I'm really sorry. I was a huge fucking dick to you earlier in the movie, and now I'm like, I feel really bad about it. I should have –
You're a testament to the ring selection process.
And then I like how they give us some retroactive characterization for – Abin Sur, it's like he would all this stuff.
LOL.
He was rebellious and he was like headstrong. He thought for himself, and it's like, except that all the evidence we got in the movie is that he was very studious. Like he was very like devoted to the Guardians. Like the fact he's the only person that knew that Parallax was a rogue Guardian and didn't tell anybody. You think Hal Jordan knew that information? He wouldn't tell anybody. Like no, he's completely the fucking opposite. But it's just the movie's Geoff Johnsyisms happening again. So. So what do we think about the fact that this movie is a failure, I guess, essentially? I mean, critically and commercially. I mean, we can't call it per se, but let's be honest and say that, like, you know, movies that do business like this don't get franchised. So
I think had this opened in December, like it originally was supposed to, it would have done so much better. I mean, because had they pushed this back, knowing that they had – that extra $9 million to work on this movie, you could have pushed this movie back to December, where there is absolutely no competition coming out this winter. I think the biggest movie coming out this winter is Girl with a Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah, I think there's no – yeah, because the James Bond movie got pushed out and the Star Trek movie's not coming out until like another 2 years. So, yeah, that's it.
You know, I think critically, I don't know. I guess the first – 15, 20 minutes of the movie where Tomar is talking just ruined the movie for people because to me, between that and the little birthday party incident, that was the worst part of the movie. Other than that, it was just it was just average, you know? It wasn't horrible. There was no horrible moments in this movie where it was just dreadful.
There were some forehead-slapping moments with dialogue.
Doesn't he get the girl, stuff, you know, and that kind of thing?
Yeah, that was up there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, nothing like drastically my God.
Tom was pretty – I mean, Tom redeemed – not redeemed himself, but the part where he jumps out of the chair, that was funny.
There's some good stuff. It's kind of like a lot of the characters are kind of inserted in there arbitrarily. I think I'm glad that Tom was in there, but I mean, what did he do that we couldn't have gotten from someone else? And you know,
at least he wasn't called Pie Face.
I mean, like I said, I thought this was just brutally attacked by critics and that just went downhill very, very quickly because reviews didn't start popping up until 2 or 3 days before.
Yeah.
And
which is not average.
Spread like wildfire.
It became like,
it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. It probably would have done a little bit better in sales if they hadn't got just a stream of hate.
There's a bit of mob mentality, but I mean, it's not a great movie.
It's not a great movie, but you got to admit they didn't have to teabag the movie that bad in the ratings.
Maybe it was the X-Men First Class effect. Because everyone loved that movie, and it just came out 2 weeks prior.
Well, I think there's
I mean that certainly does it no favors.
Some kind of fatigue has to be mentioned because you have three movies that came out this summer that were all superhero movies, and everybody's like, but they're really fans. I mean, summer people want to see like action movie, so they don't really care that there's three superhero.
This is the biggest action summer of all time, by the way.
But it's like there's a certain amount of fatigue because it's not only it's not just that you have three superhero movies coming in a row, you have three lower tier movies. I mean, as much as it's X-Men, it's not a Wolverine movie, you know, and as much as it's Marvel, it's Thor, for God's sake, you know, and as much as we like Green Lantern, we think he's a great character, and in the pantheon of the DC Universe, and for DC readers,
it's still Green Hornet, right?
Exactly, it's still, like, wasn't he a black guy, you know, it's still...
I just had that conversation, by the way, the Green Hornet thing.
You know, I just had that conversation. People were confused about that, but I read a little bit about it, and people were legitimately like, I thought that movie came out 4 months ago, yeah, so, I mean, I think there's a certain amount of, like, you have to be honest, like, there probably is a certain amount of, like, why am I going to watch four superhero movies in a row about characters I don't give a shit about, you know? And that's what they said. That's what the audience...
How much of this you think attribute late marketing push? I mean, because the push didn't start till I thought they did well with that.
It was late because the
way the tracking worked for the weekend now, because this is Thursday night coming into Friday morning, we're recording this the week before is when it opened. The way it tracked is the midnight was as good as they hoped it would be, and then by Friday it was going okay. And then Saturday it tanked, and that's word of mouth. That means people saw the movie, didn't really like it that much, or people saw the movie, thought it was okay, didn't tell their friends about it, didn't talk it up, and that's it. You're done. You're sunk.
I think it was a 21% drop off between Friday and Saturday when movies usually increase on Friday.
There was anticipation for the movie, and then just people didn't like it as much as they thought they would, you know. And that's really what it is. And it's not that's critical acclaim had something to do with it because people do wait till later in the weekend to see the movie, and that did kind of kill it for people and stuff. But I mean, it's not like we can't say the critics are all assholes and the critics are all don't know what they're talking about because you know. Again, we might be a little too close to this to see. I mean, there was a certain amount of – I was excited to see Hal punch people, you know, and I was excited to see constructs and shit. But, like, you know, maybe if I'm being completely objective, I also like Dragon Ball Evolution, you know. So if I'm being completely objective, then it's kind of like maybe I don't know what I'm talking about.
I kind of like your comment before on a previous podcast where you were saying, like, don't you guys feel kind of weird that, you know, DC is, like, pushing this Green Lantern movie as, like, the end-all, be-all Green Lantern product where, you know, we're kind of okay with the comics. I'm still okay with the comics, and I'm okay with this movie not doing so well because I never really was all that in love with it to begin with.
I was someone who has who's had – you know, really loved the comics, read most of the Green Lantern comics ever published, liked a lot of them, didn't like a lot of them, and I kind of was hoping that this movie would be a synthesis of all the things I liked. Like, I mean, I hate to talk about it all the time, but First Flight, like, I can't love First Flight any more than I do, you know what I mean? And like, when I think about Green Lantern, I'm like, oh man, this latest issue of Green Lantern sucked. This last 2 years of Green Lantern sucked. I'm like, you know what? First Flight was pretty badass. You know what? Justice League is an awesome show, and like, I can loop back around to like media interpretations of it to kind of justify my love for it, which I don't know if that seems like I'm a traitor to comics, but whatever. And I was kind of hoping this would be the same thing, but what do you do?
Well, do you really I don't think this really sets them back. I mean, because we've heard Alan Horn, president of Warner Brothers, say time and time again that DC is the future. DC is our new Harry Potter.
Well, they hope so. Yeah, they hope so. And I think I agree with you. I think they're going to try at least one more. maybe two at the same time, big tentpole properties. They'll probably do Flash or Wonder Woman or something.
No, well, I can't see Flash being done now because it's from the same creative minds as this.
They could just – well, it's true, the writers and stuff. They could just divorce themselves from it and stuff. They might look at the fact that public reaction to it was like – the critical reaction was like 20-80 and public reaction was like 65-35. So, I mean, like – people did kind of like it. It was just a little better. You know what I mean? Like, but I think maybe, like I said, maybe who else could they put out there? Aquaman? I mean, come on. That's a fucking joke, you know?
Aquaman's a cha- – I mean, it, I think this really –
What?
I think this strengthens the case for a Justice League movie where it's like, okay, these lower-tier movies with the lower-tier characters aren't working out so well. Fuck it. Let's put them all together in one movie and see how
Here's the problem with that right now. Here's the problem with that. After Avengers 1 comes out, what is Marvel going to do? Because
that's the best,
you know, and exactly, and like,
well, the plan is S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, even then, nobody really wants a S.H.I.E.L.D. Nobody really wants
Avengers 2.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what you mean. And they're going to do Iron Man 3 after that, and then they're saying we want to do Thor 2, but what are we? What are you going to do? Fight the Executioner? Waste of time. Yeah. And then they want to do Captain America 2, and that's cool because maybe they'll do like a, you know, like a Temple of Doom kind of thing. But no, they're not going to. Like, you know, it's just going to be. You're going to see Bucky show up in Avengers 2. You're going to see War Machine show up in Avengers 3. I mean, that's it. You know, and even then, Avengers, they can't make more than 2 or 3. You know, well, I guess a lot of them are contracted for like 9.
No, yeah, the money is they're pretty good with their money. They don't pay you shit.
Sounds like a lot of foresight.
Well, that's basically what it is now. Once they did the Avengers movie, that's it. Like they don't know what they're going to do after that, you know. And if DC does the same thing to a Justice League movie, no one's going to care about a Green Lantern movie after that. No one's going to care about a Flash movie after that. You're losing your franchise completely. You can start branching out to like do Justice League Part 3 and it just features Flash and Aquaman, but then who the fuck even wants to see that, you know what I mean? Like then you run into
If they do the Justice League movie, at least you can guarantee some good sales because just for Batman and Superman together alone, you're going to get droves.
You know, and if you would have just put a Superman cameo in this, you would have knocked up the money.
Well, once they shoot their wad with the last of the Nolan movies, and when the latest Superman comes out, and the Green Lantern movie tanked, I mean, I feel like that's probably they're going to feel like, well, this is the only thing we haven't tried at this point.
Well, did they say they're developing?
I mean, unless they want to put it off by testing the waters again, it's like a Superman Batman movie.
I just think
movie.
They should. Like I said, I think. The best idea for them is to do one more tentpole character like Wonder Woman, and that's really the character they should focus on because that character has more. She has more. Everybody's like Wonder Woman this, Wonder Woman that, but she has more merchandise.
This is too risky.
I agree, but these guys are nervous.
She's got more merchandise appeal than any of the other characters, and that's really.
But Green Lantern has a great merchandise gimmick in the ring.
I'm sorry. I just meant that Wonder Woman merch sells insane amount of money. Like,
oh yeah,
that's
definitely.
Green Lantern merch doesn't sell that well comparably. Wonder Woman like sells shit like nuts. You know what I mean? Like the fact that nobody buys the comic doesn't matter. DC doesn't care that nobody buys the comic. It sells like nuts. That's why Superman. That's why they're fighting so hard to keep the Superman copyright because they don't give a shit about like the creative voice of Superman.
They care about the logo.
I mean,
logo.
It's exactly the logo. It sells everywhere. I want to get that tattooed on my asshole. You know what I mean? Like it's great. So that's DC.
Superman
like
was
said,
here.
Flash movie would be awesome to see. And I don't even know if I care about a Wonder Woman movie either way. Honestly, and I love Wonder Woman, but like they should go for something like one more thing like that. If that doesn't work, then they should just you know see what the fuck else they're doing. Make $10 million, $10 million, $60 million movies with Etrigan and shit like that. You know, like that nobody cares about. But yeah.
Well, apparently that's the Marvel plan.
That
too,
should be the Marvel plan. Yeah, do some.
Go smaller with you know like Doctor Strange and with a lower budget movie.
Like,
yeah,
Luke Cage, just don't,
Luke
yeah,
Cage.
Don't use Isaiah Mustafa, but otherwise just go ahead and do Luke Cage. Yeah, yeah, Iron Fist. Why not?
Well, I guess before we wrap this up, I just wanted to mention if they do go ahead and do the Justice League movie after this, it'd be exactly what they had planned 5 or 6 years ago with the strikeout.
Started casting. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that movie was supposed to spin off the Flash movie and the Wonder
Woman. There was this whole thing.
You said the script was tailored to spin 2 or 3 movies.
Yeah, you could be right. It could be the opposite of the Marvel idea. Yeah.
And I feel like if they did that because this tanked and it turned out to be halfway decent, then you just go for it. You just say, fuck it, let's go. Let's put together a shitty Flash movie. Let's put together a shitty Wonder Woman movie, Aquaman, Black Lightning, whoever you got to do. Put them out there because they're all going to be like, okay, this is the guy I know from Justice League. This is the woman I know from Justice League. And I think that worked.
Yeah. And I said this, I think when all is said and done, people are going to look at this movie and be like, you know what, it was pretty good, wasn't really that bad. And I think it's just, it's a failure of production. otherwise, it's not a bad movie. And I think overall, so yeah, I guess so. What we're saying is, I'm sorry that Karen and Kuhan and Frankie couldn't be here. Maybe they'll give us their thoughts on this later on. But yeah, so I guess overall, we're saying we liked it.
Is the good better than
I liked it?
Does the good outweigh the bad?
I do think so. I mean, I'm settling for a lot of stuff, and it's not as exciting as it should have been. And you can see the flaws clear as day. But I liked it. I was happy with it. I was excited for it. I did wear my ring, not my t-shirt. My t-shirt was in the laundry. My underwear was dirty, so I just wore the ring. But was excited about it.
I kind of felt like an asshole because I wore a Superman shirt to it.
Yeah, well, I wore a Wolverine mask, so I don't know what you're doing. But yeah,
the guy who took my ticket, he said, "Hey, make sure you stay after the credits." I said, "Really? Thanks. How about that?"
You're a sweetie.
Yeah. Thanks, guy.
Yeah, you're a great guy. Yeah. So overall, I think we're all saying we liked it. Hopefully, it's almost like we've been talking about it for so long. It's almost like how I'm so fatigued with it. I don't even know what to think about it. But
are you gonna see it again?
It's official. We've actually talked about this movie longer than the movie was.
Yeah. I wanted to see.
It is.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Sorry, guys. But all right. Well. All right. Well. Thanks for listening, guys. I'm sorry for rambling, but I'm not really sorry. So I'm gonna take that back immediately. And stay tuned for our next episode, which I guess we'll get back to the comics that we all know. And I want to say love, but I think you all mean I think y'all know I don't mean that either. So again, this is Eric, Brandon, Andrew, and Colton signing off on the Green Lantern Corecast episode
32
movie review. And Ryan Reynolds, keep trying.
And hey, in case you didn't fill up your biweekly dose of Kuhan, you can check out what I thought about the Green Lantern movie at the Draft Time podcast. That's at bit.ly. It's bit.ly/DRAFT TIME. That's bit.ly/DraftTime with a capital D and capital T. I was on episode 10 talking about the movie because I'm on this show, and they were all like, "Hey, you should come on our show and talk about the movie." So I talk about it there, and you can check that out. Yeah. On to the ending stuff now.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can also email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at @theGLCorps.
And be sure to check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GLSpotlight.
You can reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814.
Thanks for listening, and check us out next time. And please stop masturbating when I'm talking to you.
Don't forget to check out Kirby Crackle, the performance of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at kirbycracklemusic.com. Also check out the Roy Clark Method, the performance of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at freeweb.com/RoyClarkMethod.
I have this magic ring. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me. It says, "How? What have you done with your life? People around you keep dying."